We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this program.
This is breaking news. Breaking news on WEEI is brought to you by Beat the Streak. For tips to win a $5.6 million prize, listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, a Woj bomb has dropped. According to Adrian Wojnarowski, free agent Blake Griffin has agreed to a one-year, fully guaranteed deal with the Boston Celtics, sources tell ESPN. So last year with the Brooklyn Nets, I do find this interesting, Hart. I'm on Pro Basketball or on Basketball Reference.
Me too.
And I'm looking at the year-by-year stats for Blake Griffin. Power forward, power forward, power forward, power forward, power forward. Last year, center?
Yeah.
What?
Well, he grew.
Oh, apparently so.
He had that, like, you know, 35-year-old jump or whatever, 32-year-old growth spurt.
So
I'm waiting.
He's waiting. It's on the Luis Gonzalez plan, sure, where you have your best home run year at, 38 years old or whatever it is.
So you're diminishing the move.
This guy stinks. I mean, I'll steal the line. To me, he's old Grant Williams in a lot of ways. It's a nice name. If this were 2015, Sprout Wood, baby.
Well, yeah,
but here are the numbers from Blake Griffin last year. He started 24 games last year, which again is
part-time starter.
Yeah. So 17 minutes a game. He averaged, 6.4 points per game.
Mm.
Shot some threes, not very well. And what were the rebounds? 4 rebounds per game.
6 and 4.
Again, I know he's a depth piece and all that stuff, but the Celtics needed a big, and this is what they came up with? This guy who we were, let's be real now, if we're going to be honest with ourselves, whenever the Celtics were matching up against the Brooklyn Nets last year in the playoffs, we were laughing at people like Blake Griffin,
sure,
being on that team.
Sure.
And now I'm supposed to, you know, get all hot and bothered and be there's the replacement for Gallinari. Yeah.
Okay, 2 questions.
Okay.
Are you hot and bothered to see Cornette play center? Because I've been told by some that he's going to have a big role on this team.
Listen, the murder Cornette, we know what he's going to be, and he's a necessity because I don't think Blake Griffin takes the place of Al Horford as a center. And I'm not saying that the murder Cornette is what he is, but that's the thing. He knows what he is. I think Blake Griffin at times still thinks he's a good player.
I'm not so sure about that. And then my next question is this alarming in any way? Is this tied into the extended Time Lord absence that went from whatever it was going to be 4 weeks to 8 weeks to 12 weeks? Like,
now that's interesting.
I read into this move anything?
Now that is,
alarming, concerning, notable.
It's hard to kind of figure out how the pieces all sort of fit together because you know Time Lord's going to be down. And then how are they going to manage Al Horford? Because Al Horford might have to play more minutes early in the year until Time Lord gets back, and you sort of manage Al maybe on the back half of the regular season to be able to make sure he's upright and ready for the postseason. Now, I'm sure Blake Griffin might end up getting a few or some of those minutes. I just don't – I think he's a great name. He'll sell some jerseys.
I used to love
Hoopy-doo. But I just don't think this guy can play anymore.
Yeah, I read into this a little bit because I don't think you want to push the Al Horford thing. I think whatever your plan is going to be, I think you want to stick to it.
Can't change, correct.
Because I think you want that to play out over the long haul. Now, I know they have a lot up in the air right now with the whole coaching thing.
To say the least.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. I think this is center depth, Time Lord related, minutes related, insurance. And I'm with you. Like, I used to love Blake Griffin. Like, I thought he was one of the more exciting players coming out of college, coming into the NBA. You know, he's dunking over Kias or whatever the hell he did and, like, the various things. He's not that anymore. Yeah, but that doesn't mean this has to be Shaq when he came through Boston that 1 year.
But
there can be a happy medium where he plays a few minutes and gives you a couple tough minutes.
But he's also as injury-prone as Time Lord. He's not someone that you can—
56 games isn't terrible.
Yeah, that's the most he has played since 2018-2019 where he played 75. And then to find him even near 56 minutes or 56 games before that, you got to go all the way back to 2017-2018. Okay. He's had one clean season.
I don't need him clean.
At 21 years old.
I need him
all
early.
The way back in 2010.
I don't need him clean. I need him early. Right? I need you give me minutes early, and then hopefully Time Lord is back, and Time Lord and so, Al down the stretch.
So when Blake Griffin gets hurt, you're okay to transition into your other hurt guy
right.
coming back.
They
so,
just can't be hurt together.
Got it. So if Blake Griffin's going to give you 56 games, it's got to be the first 40 and then go from there.
Pretty much. And then you take some time off, and then when Time Lord gets hurt in April or May, I need you to come back and give me some more minutes. It's not what his name would bring.
Correct.
But I also don't know that it's as meaningless as you are painting it.
All right, let's go to Tony and Revere on Blake Griffin to Boston on the breaking news. Hi, Tony.
Hi, I'd like to comment on the breaking news. I think the Celtics have now vaulted into the top five in the league for load management next year between Brogdon, who played 56 games last year, Brogdon, who's an injury waiting to happen, Time Lord, and now Blake Griffin. And I think they're in the top five for load management. I can't wait to pay $200 to watch these guys sit on the bench in street clothes. It should be fun.
Tony and Revere, so it'll be fun.
Time out.
Okay.
If you're paying $200,
street clothes.
You're not paying $200 to see Brogdon or Time Lord or Griffin, in my opinion. You're paying $200 to see Tatum and Brown.
Yeah.
Like, Time Lord, I know, is fun when he's in the lineup. The lobs and the blocks and the energy and the dunks and all that.
And the garden, too. I mean, my God.
But, I mean.
What an iconic place.
Tatum and Brown are the guys.
No, he really is. You're exactly right. You're paying for the superstars.
Yeah.
Or you're also paying to see them match up against the opponent. And I understand Tony's point on the whole, this has now become a massive load management team. Well, you know what?
Luckily, you have a veteran coach who can manage those things.
Well, that's right. If Jay Larinaga comes over, you're right. I wonder if this is to lure Jay Larinaga. I know that he just went to the Clippers. I'm only clowning. But every team is in load management mode. Even the Bucks, you know, they've realized they got to kind of pace Giannis a little bit. I think the Nets have clearly shown that they have to pace Kyrie and KD. And I would dare say that James Harden is probably going to get some load management. Normally, that's a giant dump of a load in his pants come playoff time. But still, they'll manage that load to get through the season.
Are the Celtics
now, I don't think they're any different than any other team.
But are they mature and good enough? Are they in load management phase of their evolution as a roster? I know, like, Al Horford. He's got load management in his career, but I'm talking about the big picture Boston Celtics, a team as of last December was not very good, that stunk. Are they ready? Oh, we'll flip the switch when we need to.
Like, it's not so much flipping the switch. I think some of it is managing the Youngs a little differently, meaning Tatum and Brown. You know, do I need Jason Tatum at 40 minutes every game? Can I shave it to, say, 35, 36? And again, I know it's like, boy, it's only like 4 minutes a game or whatever, and there'll be somewhere he goes the distance. There's no question. But I think it also includes those guys as well. And I would say yes. I think the Celtics, think about it. The Celtics, the Bucks, the Nets, the Nets and the 76ers. Those are four of the better teams in the Eastern Conference.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me which one of those teams is not going to be, at least during the regular season and maybe the first 60 games, in some sort of load management mode. I think it's a little bit of reflective of where the league is.
Yes.
And it's not every player. Like Grant Williams, get your ass out there. You're playing a ton of minutes. Great. Go play. I don't need to pay some guys, but there are some dudes that you need to kind of pace a little bit. Hey, Joel Embiid. I think that, you know, again, he tried to win the MVP last year and played his tail off. they're going to end up managing his minutes a little bit. And some of the veterans that they brought into the 76ers. I just think it is reflective of the better teams. If you're Memphis, if you're Cleveland, you had to play all your guys all the time, minus injury. Had to play them all, had to get to where you needed to be. Celtics have already crossed that bridge. So I think, yeah, that's a big part of this season.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they are evolutionary, if they've evolved to the point where they're, say, the Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the Bucks with Giannis and Middleton in that group is a veteran group with a veteran coach. They know they're going to be there at the end. It's about getting to through the marathon, you know, ready to sprint for the finish. Are the Celtics there yet? Celtics have been good for less than a calendar year. That's what I keep saying. Like, we haven't reached the point. Last December, they stunk. They were irrelevant. They couldn't play. They were not entertaining. People didn't care.
Then they blew doors.
Then they got good.
Yep.
Are they that? Are they that good? Are they a load management, maturing, evolving,
we know what we're going to get kind of team? Yeah, I think Well, I think you have to go in that way, because if you go in the other way saying you've done nothing and all you a-holes are going to play as much as I want to play you, then you're arguably shooting yourself in the foot.
Possibly.
If you look at that with Al Horford and be like, sorry, Al, 35 a game, we ain't good enough.
Well, I think he's in a different place, but
Tatum, like, look at, you know, part of the reason Tatum got ground down last year in the NBA Finals is when you look at the international play, the Olympic stuff, he logged a ton of minutes during the regular season. Like, I do think for Brown and Tatum in particular, they have now gotten into, is it full-blown LeBron mode or KD mode, where or Kawhi Leonard, where it's, hey, you're only going to play 62 of the 82? No. And I think that is the truest version of load management, where you get those guys in their 30s. Like, that's the kind of treatment Al Horford, in my opinion, is going to get.
But they're
Al
a decade
should be
away.
Playing 62 games.
They're a decade away from that.
Yeah, but you got to be smart about it to be able to. There's so much on each of those young guys that if you don't manage them during the year, you run the risk of them getting worn down again. And if the goal is to win a championship, isn't one of the things that we learned last year was all of those extra minutes that a guy like Jason Tatum played, if you go back and you could shave a little bit here, a little bit there, I wonder how many in the Celtics organization were like, you know what, we probably could have managed him a little better given everything that he's coming off of.
Yeah, we'll see. I thought the message last year was finish strong, don't, you know, don't look to take the easy road, take the hard road, play it out. Like, I thought that was the message.
Well, look, in the NBA, I think there are different levels of either seniority from players or that championship credibility, right? You assume that with the Brooklyn Nets, you got two guys who have rings. They're arguably their two best players in Kyrie and KD. So there is an assumption, I think, for most that is a championship-level-worthy team because you have those two guys. And I'm talking about in their organization, the way they have to think about it, because it's the same thing here. Even though you don't have the shiny ring on your finger with your team's name on it, you're not that far away. And to me, if you're going to get by what will be a tough second-round battle like it was last year against a team like the Bucks, they've got to alter things a little bit. They got to try. It's really funny that we've gotten into this. We're on Tua, who gets concussed, playing a game 3 days later, gets a second concussion. My God, everybody's reacting. We're here talking about Mac Jones. They're doing this whole funny bunny business about whether he is or isn't going to play and all that stuff. And we're sitting here looking at a team that went to an NBA Finals and wondering, does that culture carry over? And should there be load management for these guys, which last year ultimately might have cost them because of the way Tatum played in the Finals?
Yeah, and I just – the thing I struggle with is, are they closer to the team that went to the Finals, or are they closer to the team that was unwatchable in December?
Well, what do you think they are?
Probably somewhere in the middle based on the changes. Because I don't think you can discount Ime.
You found my fence.
Yes, I'm on your fence. But I don't think you can discount Ime's role in the evolution last year, just that singular season. And now you're saying whatever Tatum and Brown and Smart and those guys did and learned last year, they're ready to do it on their own now without Ime to set that culture and that tone and be that team. I don't know if I'm
all
the way there yet.
So in your world, Ime was a big part of where they got. Because I think what Ime did was figure out how to get these guys to listen to each other and to respect each other's games.
Okay.
And as long as that can carry over, to me, that was the biggest development out of last year. Even if they lost in Game 7 to Milwaukee, it would have been, you lost to a championship team, you're not that far away, you kind of extract all that out. Whereas now they kind of cross that bridge a little bit, and do you think there's a chance that Smart, Tatum, and Brown go back to being the Smart, Tatum, and Brown that they were in the first 40 games without Udoka? Because I'd like to think that those guys, now that they sort of crossed that bridge, will respect each other enough to not go back to the bickering type ways.
We'll see. Because when the going gets tough, sometimes you resort to muscle memory, right? Like you go back to the old ways. And if the going gets tough early in the year,
I thought you were going to roll out a true old school coaching ism. When the going gets tough, the tough get going.
Yeah, no. Yeah, they should. I'm just not sure they're the tough. That's my question.
Well, who's the guy that is the most important person then on the floor to keep all of that kind of going together?
Marcus Smart.
That, you and I
think
sharing
he gets
a brain
in the way
on that.
Sometimes.
Absolutely. And that's really what it – because I do think Tatum and Brown, once they got to the NBA Finals and Jaylen Brown started to assert himself a little bit more, I think that's where – not that Tatum didn't respect the guy – but that's where he became the true Batman and Robin, right?
Yes.
The guy who really could be the dude to screw it up would be Marcus Smart. Now, let me throw another one at you here real quick. Could Malcolm Brogdon be the guy that could screw up the chemistry? Because Malcolm Brogdon clearly sees himself as a starting type player. He will be put into the starting lineup once in a blue moon, depending on who you're playing. Might he be the guy to disrupt it? Or might actually add to the chemistry and make it better. That's where if you had Ime, you might feel a little better about integrating Brogdon into sort of what they discovered last year, at least in my opinion.
So I just Googled, because I want to go back to the reason we're talking Celtics right now.
Yeah,
Celtics
which
adding
is Blake Griffin.
Blake Griffin.
Guaranteed one-year deal.
Center, veteran depth, whatever you want to call him. Where does he fit in terms of leadership? Because I didn't immediately in my head have this view of what he is as a leader.
You like mean Blake Griffin? Aura.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know. So I just Googled Blake Griffin leadership and to see what pops up.
Oh, I can only imagine.
First story, December 15th, 2020, on leadership and the value of Blake Griffin and Derrick Rose to the Pistons. The next one is Blake Griffin talks about his new leadership role. And then, like, there's a million stories about what kind of leader he is. There's actually, I forgot about this. There was a story about how Boston's culture had eroded and people told him not to come to Boston a year ago when there was consideration that he might come to the
and
Celtics
then he played in a mess in Brooklyn.
And he's like, hey, it doesn't look so bad over there now after what I just saw here.
He has a deal with Kyrie no mo.
So I'm interested to see what role he could play. Like, he's not Al Horford, right? Like, I don't view him because Al Horford's supposed to be a leader, supposed to be blah, 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 even though I think Philadelphia might question where that leadership went when they paid or overpaid for his services. But he's another piece to this puzzle because he is going to be a veteran voice in that locker room. Whether you like it or not, he's old and he's been in the NBA a long time. So he carries some weight, right? He was a superstar. Jason Tatum sees a former superstar. When he speaks, Jason Tatum was a kid when he was a superstar, correct? So in his mind, there's some superstar still in the core of that body.
Maybe.
I listen to this guy?
You know, like
you don't think he'll listen to him?
No.
Oh, I do.
Well, if it
absolutely
were,
I don't think
it were
he's
LeBron,
say, if here, take the ball and shoot.
No, but if it's LeBron or KD, I think it's a little different because they have championship credibility. Blake Griffin has zero.
No, but he was once a star in this league, and Jason Tatum saw that when he was becoming a star in his own room.
But you know as well as I do, the championship matters in terms of who they're going to listen to. If Jason Tatum is checking himself on the whole, hey, we went to X amount of Eastern Conference Finals. Now, Jason Tatum can argue he's had more playoff success than Blake Griffin.
Yeah, I'm just interested to see where his role fits in off the court as well.
It is interesting.